Good morning. It is good to see a good house full of people here this morning. It's good to be here this morning. It feels good to feel good, I'm telling you. Wow, I've never been so sick in my life, even though I wasn't normally sick. There was no puking, there was no flu symptoms. I was just very, very tired and had a fever for, I think, 5 or 6 days. I was very tired. From Sunday to Friday, I was off the couch, I think, a total of 8 hours. Day and night, and so it was. I still get a little tired. I'm a little tired this morning, but the Lord has been good, and the Lord has been really good. We say it's the little things that God watches out for us for, and God did a wonderful thing for us. He made my wife and I both sick at the same time, and they said, "Well, that's a bad thing." Well, no, actually, we've talked about it. It's a good thing, because we both would have said, "We're not sure we've had the patience with each other." And understood how you can be sick for 2 weeks. You're just being lazy on the couch, you know. But by being sick together, we understood. And I think it helped our marriage. So I think the Lord knew what he was doing, even though our house was kind of in a mess for a while. And I do thank you, everybody that texted, that brought food. We felt very well cared for. And I thank you very much for that. And I have sympathy for the rest of you that were sick. It is what it is, I guess. And we move on. We try to move on. So thank you for your prayers and for lifting us up. So this morning we want to look at Proverbs 4. We're going to look at, the title of the message is Two Paths. This morning we're going to be looking at Solomon gave some warnings and some admonitions to his sons. And he warns them about the path of the wicked, and he gives them an admonition about the path of the wise. So we're going to read, first of all, here, Proverbs 4, 10 through 27, I think is where I'm going, yep. And by the way, I do want to say thank you to Todd. He's not here, but I was supposed to preach 2 weeks ago, and with rather short notice, he covered for me. So thank Todd for doing that for me. I was actually supposed to preach last Sunday, too, I at another place, and so I felt a little, I'm not doing my job. I wasn't going to work, and I wasn't preaching when I was supposed to be, and so... Anyway, thank Todd for covering for me 2 weeks ago. But anyway, let's read Proverbs 4, verses 10 through 27. Hear, my son, and receive my sayings, and the years of your life will be many. I have taught you in the ways of wisdom. I have led you in right paths. When you walk, your steps will not be hindered, and when you run, you will not stumble. Take firm hold of instructions. Do not let go. Keep her, for she is your life. Do not enter the path of the wicked. Do not walk in the way of evil. Avoid it. Do not travel on it. Turn away from it and pass on. For they do not sleep unless they have done evil, and their sleep is taken away unless they make someone fall. For they eat the bread of violence and drink the wine. They eat the bread of wickedness and drink the wine of violence. But the path of the just is like the shining sun. The sun shines that shines ever brighter unto the perfect day. The way of the wicked is like darkness. They do not know what makes them stumble. My son, give attention to my words. Incline your ears to my sayings. Do not let them depart from your eyes. Keep them in the midst of your heart. For they are life to those who find them, and health to all their flesh. Keep your heart with all diligence, and keep out of it, for out of it spring the issues of life. Put away from you a deceitful mouth, and put perverse lips far from you. Let your eyes look straight ahead, and your eyelids look right before you. Ponder the path of your feet, and let all your ways be established. Do not turn to the right or to the left. Remove your foot from evil. So as I was reading this, we've been going through wisdom. And Solomon tells his sons, I have taught you in the way of wisdom. I have led you in right paths. And I think Solomon is giving them a warning here. He's speaking to his son. He's taught them wisdom. He's shown them the paths. But this doesn't mean that they will automatically follow them. That's how we are. Most of us have heard the gospel, have heard God's commands from very little. We've heard them. Doesn't mean that we are going to automatically follow them. Notice the words that Solomon uses here. He says, hear, take a firm hold, do not let go, give attention, incline your ear, diligent, put away. Look straight ahead. Do not turn. And that means we'll want to do exactly the opposite. We'll want to disregard what we hear. We want to hold it pretty loosely. It's not a big deal. We don't pay attention. We don't listen. Take it pretty casually. Anything goes. We look around. We like to look around, look at others, see what they're doing. You know, in another path, well, we can go this. We can go around this way. It's okay. That is often the way that we'll want to do it. That is not what Solomon is telling his sons. The path of the one following the Lord's command is lit up. We see that here, and we'll talk about that a little more. Like it's the middle of a beautiful, blue, sunshiny day. You can see where you're going. Everything is there. The wicked is on a path that is dark as a moonless light, a moonless night. Have you ever thought about walking through the woods in the middle of the night? It'd be terrible. I'll give you a little example of walking through our house in the dark. So, I think this was before we were sick. We are training a dog right now, house training a dog, and we have a big cage that we keep her in at night. No, we don't keep her at night. During the day, we keep her in there. At night, we have her little cage that we put her out in the laundry room. And anyway, she had the tendency to go upstairs. We didn't want her upstairs. So we put this pen that we put her in today in front of the steps. So it's black, wire, little cage. So one night I woke up and she was barking out in the laundry room. And I'm like, oh, the back door wasn't latched right. It blew open. And so I get out of bed, half asleep, to go check the door. And I'm walking, you know, it's dark. I didn't want to turn on any lights. It's dark. And I walk in front of the steps and I forget that this wire pen is there. And I kicked that thing right between the toes on my left foot. Oh, it hurt. Hobbled off, checked the door, and the door wasn't open. It was all good. I don't know what she was barking at. I turn around, and I come back, and I kick it again with my right foot. And I had been thinking about this message, and I'm like, man, that's walking in the dark, and you don't see where you're going. Kicked it both ways, and it hurt. And that's the difference. That's sometimes how we walk through life in the dark and we can't see those things and we kick them and we stub our toes. And the other thing that came to me, we have the narrow path. We say that Christ, we follow the narrow path. But the nice thing about that narrow path is it is lit. God promises us that he will give us a light. He will be a light to our path. But the wide road is a dark road. And we don't see those things that are set there to trap us. You know, people walking the narrow path can see those traps that are being set for them. The wide and dark road is full of traps, full of stumbling blocks that can't be seen because they are blinded by their sin. We can't see them because we're blinded by our sin. So the warnings that Solomon gave his sons about the path of the wicked, he says, do not enter. Do not enter the path of the wicked. Do not walk in the way of evil. Avoid it. Do not travel on it. Turn away. Pass it by. And the heart of the wicked. Talks about the heart of the wicked. Put away deceit. Put perverse lips far from you. Remove your foot from evil. And we're not going to probably go verse by verse through this passage. And we'll look at it as a whole. And the results of that. Well, I'm going to read the results. The results of the path of the wicked. It says they don't sleep. They don't sleep unless they make others fall. Wouldn't that be fun? Isn't that so much fun? They dine on wickedness. They drink violence. The path they walk is dark, and they will stumble because of the darkness. Verse 19 says, the way of the wicked is like darkness. They do not know what makes them stumble. Psalm 1 talks about this also. Psalm 1, 1-6. Blessed is the man who walks not in the counsel of the ungodly, nor stands in the path of sinners, nor sits in the seat of the scornful. But his delight is in the law of the Lord, and in his law he meditates day and night. Notice the differences here, and we're going to see some of these differences in the message here, but notice the differences here in Psalm between the man that, the ungodly and the righteous. But his, going back to verse 2, but his delight is in the law of the Lord, and in his law he meditates day and night. He shall be like a tree planted by the rivers of water, that brings forth its fruit in its season, whose leaf also shall not wither, and whatever he does shall prosper. The ungodly are not so, but in the judgment. But the ungodly shall not stand in the judgment, nor sinners in the congregation of the righteous. Sorry, I missed this. Let's go back to verse 4. The ungodly are not so, but are like the chaff which the wind drives away. Therefore, the ungodly shall not stand in the judgment, nor sinners in the congregation of righteous. For the Lord knows the way of the righteous, but the way of the ungodly shall perish. Coming back to one of the things that stuck out to me was the stumbling in the darkness that the ungodly, that the wicked live in, and don't even realize it, I think. I don't think they realize it. And I had to think about it. As I was studying this, I was thinking about, I like to run. I don't ever. So does that mean I like to run? I'm not sure. I used to like to run. Now I'm out of shape. I about can't. But thinking about running in the dark would scare me. Especially if I think about, I like cross-country running. I like to take it slow, and I'm not a really fast runner. But I like to run through the country. And to think about doing that at night, and I came across something. I came across an article I was looking at. I said, there's got to be people that are crazy enough to run at night. I mean, there's got to be somebody. And there was an article about the challenges of running at night. And I want to read some of those. He gave 7 challenges because I think they coincide very well with the spiritual side of things. And this is what he says. There are many good reasons why many of us don't want to go out at night. This is to run. Let's look at the 7 top reasons why. Number 1, it's difficult to see. Pretty obvious one, but worth pointing out. Nighttime is dark time, and it's not when us humans fare too well. This can lead to many problems, from how trails appear at night to missing the footpath sign and getting severely lost. Number 2 is altered reality. At night, our mind can play tricks on us, from how we perceive the passage of time to how we perceive objects such as trees and shrubs, which in the dark appear bigger than they actually are. Now, these things fit very well with our spiritual life when we live in sin. Trip hazards, 3, a direct result of not being able to see well. Those tiny twigs or uneven pavements suddenly become obstacles for our feet. Those things that when we run in the day, we don't even think about. Don't even think about it. We just run right over them. We avoid them. Don't even think about it. But at night, you can't see those things. This is one I didn't think about. 4 is head height obstacles. Wow, that was close. Yes, trails are 3D. If you may have managed to stay on your feet, then maybe a branch will get you. And think about that. Sometimes, you know, if you're running at night, sometimes when we run out in the country, like, you know, you see something, you avoid it. There's a race called Tough Mudders, I think it's called, where it's an obstacle course. And to think about running that at night, you couldn't. You know, there's no way you could run it at night. But in the daytime, you can do that. 5, cold. Simple laws of thermodynamics. No sun equals colder. This can be good in the summer, but can compound the issue if it's winter. If it's a winter run you are embarking on. 6, lonely. Is it just me? We are social beings, us humans. Too many people are too busy. Too few is more worrying, and no one. Maybe I shouldn't be here. Well, there's a difference. So we're social beings, but if there's too many people, yeah, it's just too many people. Too few is more worrying, and no one. If there's no one out there, you're going, maybe I shouldn't be out here. And 7 is anxiety and fear. Seriously, running at night can feel pretty threatening from urban to rural environments. The last thing you want to do is put yourself in danger. And as I read those, I thought about how that really does apply in our spiritual life. All those things apply when we're running in darkness, in the spiritual darkness. It's difficult to see. There's altered reality. And some of that is, we say, well, there are no consequences, when actually there are consequences that we could see if we had had light to see. The trip hazards, the head height obstacles, not just the things that are on the ground, but the things that whack us in the head as we run by. It's cold, it's lonely, anxiety and fear. Those are all things that I think the world experiences daily because they have no hope. This morning in our new believers class, or not new believers class, baptismal class, we were talking about sin. What is sin? And Todd was sharing about how sin, we can never pay it. we owe a huge debt that we can never pay. And the way that Todd described it, I sat there going, man, that's pretty bad. I can't ever pay this. But praise God, he provided a way. He provided his son to give us salvation. And this morning in that class, that just really stuck out to me. What a wonderful gift that God has given us because of the debt that we owe. And when we live in darkness, when we live in sin, that unconsciously, I think even people that don't know, that would say there is no God, have that, they still know there's something out there. And they don't have the joy and the peace of Jesus Christ in their heart. And I feel sorry for them. So I was thankful this morning for Christ and what he's done for us, the salvation that he's given us. Again, I was reminded of that this morning in that class. So then we come to Solomon's admonitions, talking about the path of the wise and what the wise do. It says they look straight ahead, look right before you. Let your ways be established. That means we put some plans in place. Do not turn to the right or to the left. Don't. He says, ponder your path. And we're gonna ponder this a little bit. Because that really stuck out to me. Ponder your path. That means you need to take time to stop and think. Premeditate what you will do in certain situations. And it's something I think we don't do enough. Somebody said this, it's rare to reflect deeply on something we've heard our entire lives. It's rare. And this was not a Christian person not talking about Christian things. But I think it applies to us that have grown up in the church all of our life. It's rare to reflect deeply on something we've heard our entire lives. But sometimes it's a good idea. I think it is. I think sometimes it is a good idea to ponder your path, to think about those things. And so as I was pondering this, I came up with some things that I have looked at throughout my life, and I'll give you some examples, and it scares me just a little bit, because it seems like Satan, I'm going to give you some examples of the way I've thought things through, and some things we've talked about, and decisions we've made, and every time I do that, that next week, something happens to test that, and I'm talking about a whole bunch of them this morning, so I'm a little nervous about next week, because I'm feeling I'm going to get tested. But anyway, things to ponder, some things that I've thought about in my life, some things I think you should think about, and this list is in no way the whole thing. There's lots more things that we need to ponder in our life. And this is some for young people, some for older people, some for all of us. The first one I had to think about, things to ponder, especially as a young person. This applies to young people, hopefully not to the older married people. So when I start dating, what safeguards am I going to put in place? It's a good idea to think about that before you start dating. It's a really good idea, young people, to think about that before you start dating. Because once you start dating, things just don't seem quite as bad. You know, you're in love and wow. But ponder those things. What kind of safeguards am I going to put in place? What kind of safeguards do I want in place when I start dating? And this I think applies to everybody. What safeguards will I put in place to guard my mind and my eyes from pornography? What am I doing? What am I putting in place? Another is, what do I do to stay honest? What if I find a wallet out on the road? What do I do with it? Do I turn it in? It has a bunch of cash in it. You could just keep it. Nobody saw you pick it up. What do you do? Have you thought about those things? I think we need to think about these things ahead of time. You know, for me, and I've thought about, so this is one of those examples I'm going to give you, so it scares me. But for me, I would say, if I could steal $1 million and knew I could get away with it and I would never get caught, I still wouldn't do it. Because God can see me. Maybe nobody else can, but God can see me. And God is, it's all God's. Everything I have is God's. He can take it all away. It's not that I don't care that other people care, but I do really care that God sees what I do. So even if I knew I could get away with stealing that $1 million and I'd never get caught in it, you can't give me that guarantee, I wouldn't do it because God knows. Another thing, why do I go to the church that I go to? Why do you go to church at Living Water? Why do you go to church where you do? I told Kendra when we got married, Kendra and I talked about this when we got married. I said, we should be Amish. We should go Amish so all our kids are Mennonites. Because our kids always tend to go further than where we're at. It's not a good reason to be Amish, but anyway. But I don't know if you, think about those things, but Kendra and I did. As we were getting married, we were like, where the church is at, Kendra and I thought about what kind of church do we want our children to grow up in? You know, I was going to Griner, loved it. Loved going to Griner's. Been 20-some years ago. Kendra grew up at Salem. And we were going to Griner together as singles after she had come back from her VS and we were dating. But I saw things happening in that church that I knew I had a pretty good idea where that church was going to be in 20 years. And I did not want my children to be in that church in 20 years from now. So we found Living Water. We've been here for 20 years. We enjoy this church. But I saw things happening. We saw things happening at that church that we knew that in 20 years from now. And that's and I don't know, maybe that's my pastor's heart. But every time we do something, I don't look at things for today. If we make a decision as a church, it's not about today. It's about what that decision does for the church 20 years from now. And sometimes that's hard for other people to understand. Because sometimes I think people look at it and they want the decision for today. And I understand that. But that decision today, which I could be okay with, but where will that decision take us 20 years from now? I have pondered a lot about, I've watched a lot of churches. And there are patterns that you cannot avoid. There are patterns that you cannot avoid. And that scares me sometimes when we discuss things as a church. And I see other churches make decisions. And that really stuck out to me. Probably it's been 15 years ago. I was at a viewing at Shore Mennonite Church, which is now a very liberal church. They would be okay with the homosexual movement and a bunch of that stuff. But we were there for a viewing, and I was walking through that, and we went past the library, and they had a picture of all their preachers going way back to 1915 or 1910. They looked Amish. They were Amish. And you could see progressively every picture was just a little further. And it really made me stop and think. So what happened? It took 50 years, 60 years to get there. It was not a big steps at a time. And so that made me aware of the decisions that we make today affect us 20 years from now. So are we pondering these things? When we make a decision as a church, as an individual, am I thinking about those things? Another thing that Kendra and I thought about was, what school do we send our children to? What kind of school? There's options. There's homeschooling. There's public school. There's private Christian school. And all three have their pros and cons. I'm not going to say they don't. They all three have their pros and cons. And you have to make a decision. And I don't think it's going to be the same for everybody. But you need to make a decision what those pros and cons are. And then what you really need to make a decision on is, what are you doing about the cons? Whatever decision you make, and there's cons in all three of them. There's things that are not as good in homeschooling. There's things that are not as good in the private school. And there's things that are not good in public school. And I have my opinion on that. I'm not going to share it this morning, but I have my opinion on that. But what are you doing about the cons of any ones of those? Because you need to do something about it, whatever it is. What are you doing about those things? You've thought it through. I'm going to pick this one because I like this. Understanding that there's cons for it. But so what am I going to do to offset those? Because we need to do something. Have we thought it through? Have we pondered it through? The next one is, what kind of people do I have as friends? What kind of people do I have as friends? And so it says, you become like the people you hang out with. And that is very, very true. You become like the people you hang out with. Proverbs 13, verse 20 says, "Whoever walks with the wise becomes wise, but the companion of fools will suffer harm." Whoever walks with the wise becomes wise, but the companion of fools will suffer harm. So I've got a few sayings from different people here. Booker T. Washington said this. He says, "Associate yourself with people of good quality, for it is better to be alone than to be in bad company. Associate yourself with people of good quality, for it is better to be alone than to be in bad company." Jim Rohn says this, says, "You are the average of the five people you spend the most time with." You are the average of the five people you spend the most time with. And when I read that and thought about that, I thought, you know, it's pretty important where I work. Because I spend almost as much waking hours with the people I work with as I do with my wife. It's very important where I work. Because often I work with more than with five or more people surrounding me. Some of us don't. But it's important to think about those things. Leora Alderson, I don't know who she is, but there's a couple sayings here that she said. She says, "Hang out with people who will challenge you to be your best, and you will become that." Hang out with people who will challenge you to be your best, and you will become that. Hang out with people that will help you walk in the ways of Christ, and you will. Another thing she says, "Make an effort to hang out with those who are where you want to go." Hang out with those that are where you want to go. "If you want to arrive at the life you've imagined, you must associate with those who are where you want to go." And that applies to our Christian life. If we see somebody that we feel is like is a strong Christian, and he's walking in victory, associate with those kind of people. Maybe we say, "Well, I know nothing." But, you know, there's one thing about successful people is they don't mind sharing. Most successful people don't mind sharing with you what made them successful. Most successful people don't mind doing that. The things that they did. The man that is walking in Christ, the woman that is walking in Christ successfully, won't mind sharing with you, even though you say, "Well, I'm the worst sinner in the world." They will not mind sharing with you the things that they've done that's worked for them and the thing that hasn't worked for them. Sometimes we need to hear that too. "You know, this did not work for me. They weren't perfect. They weren't walking like that just immediately. It was a growth. They did some things right. They did some things wrong. And if we can learn from that, so much the better. What kind of people do I have as friends? And so, just for an example, I want to work through one, how I would ponder something. This is not all the questions that you could ask. And I ponder something by asking questions. When I'm thinking about something, I ask questions and try to answer those questions. That's what I do. That's how I work through it. So I have one here that I'm going to do that. Other people might work it through it differently. I'm just giving it as an example. And this one is social drinking. That is something, and I'm thankful, I don't think it's quite as prevalent in this community as it is in some others. I know in Ohio this is a big deal, where social drinking has become accepted. And if you would ask me, "Social drinking okay?" I'll tell you no. Because I've thought it through, and so I want to walk through how I thought through this. And we'll go from there. So it's an example. It's not how everybody else how you might process it, but it's how I process it. So you often hear social drinking won't hurt me and it won't hurt anyone else. So the first question I would ask myself, or I would ask you, so you've never had alcohol, you grew up in a church, social drinking is okay. How do you know you can handle alcohol? Can you prove to me that you can handle it? "Well, no, I've never had any." "Wow, I don't know if I can handle alcohol. I have this bad feeling that I couldn't." So what if you can't handle alcohol? Now you just added a burden to your life that you didn't have. You have one more burden, one more fight that you have to fight every day that you wouldn't have to fight. Next question I would ask you, so you can handle alcohol. We have, can't prove it, but you can handle the alcohol. Can your spouse handle it? Can your spouse handle the alcohol? You decide you can handle it. Your spouse decides to also social drink. Can she handle the alcohol? Don't know. How about your children? How about your son that grows up seeing you drink socially? You never get drunk. You never have more than one beer. You're great. Can your son handle it? It's questions you have to ask yourself. Can my son handle alcohol? And what if he can't? And what if he starts to drink because I'm drinking and he can't handle it? Do I want that? Or my daughter? What about your friends that you drink with? Can they handle alcohol? So there's a lot of questions here. It doesn't just affect me. So what happens if you're in an accident after only one beer and someone dies? You only had one beer, you're not drunk. Would you have been able to see a little more clearly? Would you have been able to react just a little bit faster if you wouldn't have had that alcohol? You'll never know. Not saying that we can't have accidents if we don't drink alcohol. Still going to happen, okay? Asking all those questions, is it still worth ordering a beer over a soda? My answer is no. Give me a Coke with a lemon in it. I'll be happy with that. Some people say, well, I'll only drink at home. I won't drink out in public, so then I don't have to worry about those things. How does alcohol affect your personality? I don't know how it affects my personality. Do you become angry quicker? Do you become a blabbermouth? Say things you shouldn't. Affects us all differently. So you say something inappropriate to a friend, or you get upset and yell at a friend or a family member, your spouse, because you're under the influence of alcohol. What did that just do? What if your children or your spouse or your friend do that because they saw you drink? What if they say something inappropriate? What if they react wrongly to their friends and to their family? Those are things, those are questions that I ask myself. So then when you, to me, it's not worth any of that. It's not worth it. So when you ask me, is social drinking wrong? I say, yeah. Because in my mind, it's not worth it. Some people say, but the Bible says wine is good for the stomach. 1 Timothy 5:23. No longer drink only water, but use a little wine for your stomach's sake and your frequent infirmities. So he gets sick a lot. I see here it was for medicinal purposes. But you know what? I don't think he had Robitussin or NyQuil. We do now. We have other things that we can use for those things. You know, some people will take a drink of wine or schnapps. My dad used to have a bottle of schnapps at home. And that if he had a really bad cold, he'd take a drink and go to bed. It was like me drinking NyQuil. That's what I do. Take a nice big swig of NyQuil right out of the bottle and go to bed. The one nice thing about having COVID is you can take all the medicine in the world and it tastes great. It's no problem. There was one benefit, COVID. I mean, I was drinking NyQuil and Robitussin. This stuff's not bad at all. It's not there anymore. It doesn't taste great anymore either. So there's people that do that. That bottle of schnapps lasted my dad 20 years. So there's I think there's maybe some things there for medicinal purposes, but social drinking, no. So that's an example of how I went through. When I think of social drinking, those are the questions that I ask. Those are the things that I look at, and I say, no, it's not worth it. Even though maybe you could, I don't think you can make a good advocate for it here in 1 Timothy. No longer drink only water, but use a little wine for your stomach's sake. I think it was for medicinal purposes. He wasn't drinking it socially. Philippians 2, 3 to 4. And then we need to keep these verses in mind also. Philippians 2, 3 to 4. Let nothing be done through selfish ambition or conceit, but in lowliness of mind, let each esteem others better than himself. Let each of you not only look out not only for his own interests, but also for the interests of others. And that's my whole concept on social drinking. I don't know if I would take drink socially and I could handle it. There are people around me that I know will not be able to. and I do not want that on me. 1 Corinthians 10:23-24. All things are lawful for me, but not all things are helpful. All things are lawful for me, but not all things edify. Let no one seek his own, but each one the other's well-being. And I think sometimes that's the decisions that we need to use. We need those verses to help us make decisions on some of these things. And I'll try to finish out here quickly. The heart of the wise, verse 21, says, keep them in the midst of your heart, talking about the commandments and the things that Solomon has taught his sons. Keep them in the midst of your heart, for they are life to those who find them, and health to all their flesh. Keep your heart with all diligence, for out of it spring the issues of life. And we see here the heart of the wise will hear and receive my sayings. Take a firm hold of instruction. Don't let go. 13 says, take a firm hold of instruction. Don't let go. Keep her, for she is your life. Give attention to my words. You know, pay attention to what I've said. Don't get distracted by life. We so often can so easily get distracted by life that we forget about to think about the things that are important and think about what we're doing and how it's going to affect our life. So give attention to my words. Incline your ears to my sayings. Seek out and find ways to hear what I've said, to remind yourself, to lean into what I've been saying. Keep them in the midst of your heart. We have to make them our treasure. Matthew 6:21 says, for where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. So we need to treasure God's commands and God's laws, and they will be in the midst of our heart. Keep your heart with diligence. What are you putting in place to guard your heart? The different things that we've talked about that we need to ponder on. What are we putting in place to guard our heart? Keep your heart with all diligence. And the result of that, your path is lit like the midday sun. Verse 18, but the path of the just is like the shining sun that shines ever brighter unto the perfect day. Your steps will not be hindered. You won't stumble when you run. Verse 12, when you walk, your steps will not be hindered. And when you run, you will not stumble because you'll be able to see those things that are in the path because it's lit up. In the daylight, you can run a mountainous trail that curves and dips and has roots because you can see them. I'd hate to run in a mountain. A couple messages ago, months ago, I talked about a trail that we were on when we went to Yellowstone. Dangerous, slippery trail. I would shudder in fear to have to walk that trail in the dark. But in the daytime, if it was me, I wouldn't be too bad running it. I'd be real careful. There's places I wouldn't run, and there's places I would slow down and walk, and there's places that I could run. But in the daytime, it's not nearly as scary. But in the dark, it would be a nightmare to run. When you walk, your steps will not be hindered, and when you run, you will not stumble. You will have true life. You will have health to your flesh. Verse 22, for they are life to those who find them, and health to all their flesh. So in closing, going back to verse 10, hear my son and receive my sayings, and the years of your life will be many. I have taught you in the way of wisdom. I have led you in right paths. When you walk, your steps will not be hindered, and when you run, you will not stumble. Take firm hold of instruction and do not let go. Keep her, for she is your life. That is a challenge. Four times, he says, wisdom results in life. In verse 10, which we just read, hear my son and receive my sayings, and the years of your life will be many. Verse 13, take firm hold of instruction, do not let go, keep her, for she is your life. Verse 21, do not let them depart from your eyes, keep them in the midst of your heart, for they are life to those who find them and health to all their flesh. Verse 23, keep your heart with all diligence, for out of it spring the issues of life. So following God's commands, honoring Him, and listening to Him is what will bring us true life, what will bring us a happy, healthy life, not in a prosperity gospel way, but in a way of having peace of God in our hearts. Let's stand and we'll have a word of prayer. Father, thank you for today. Thank you for your word. Father, we thank you for the wisdom that you've shared with us. Lord, you have given us the book of life. Lord, you've given us the book that directs us, Lord, that will guide our paths in the way of life if we follow it. Lord, help us to be diligent. Help us to not let go. Help us to look straight ahead. Help us not to be distracted by those things around us. Lord, help us to follow you, to love you with all our heart. And Lord, to be an example to those that we meet every day. In Jesus' name, amen.